Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 14.
So our mission today is to unpack how they actually met.
To look at the very first meeting between Tang Sanzang, you might know him as Tripitaka, and the legendary Sun Wukong, the Monkey King.
Exactly. What were the, you know, circumstances? Was it friendly? Was there immediate friction? How did they even start to form that famous relationship? Because let's face it, their introduction is, well, it's quite something.
It really is. It starts with Sun Wukong in a pretty dire situation. He's been in prison for 5 centuries.
100 years.
Yeah, after causing some major trouble up in the heavens. And it's not just any prison. He's literally pinned under a mountain. It was called Five Elements Mountain, but the text mentions it got renamed Two Worlds Mountain later, tied to a big historical event.
Under a mountain for that long, the description we have is vivid, isn't it? He's found basically inside a stone box covered in moss, weeds. You'd think he'd be completely broken.
But that's the thing. He's physically run down. Yes, sharp mouth, shrunken cheeks, the text says. But his eyes are described as alert, golden eyes and fiery pupils. And he speaks clearly. There's this amazing contrast, like his spirit is totally undimmed despite, well, everything.
And the story behind the imprisonment itself is wild. The mountain apparently fell right when Wang Mang took over from the Han Dynasty.
Right, a huge historical moment linked directly to his fate.
And it wasn't just left to rot either. Apparently, a local Earth deity kept him alive on iron pellets and copper juice. What a diet.
It really paints a picture of desperation, doesn't it? Which explains why when Tang Sanzang finally shows up with this local guide, Lu Boken, Sun Wukong, and sees his chance, he immediately shouts out who he is, the great sage equaling heaven.
Doesn't shy away from his reputation then?
Not at all. He owns up to the chaos he caused in heaven, getting punished by the Buddha himself. It's quite the introduction.
Bold move. But then he mentions Guanyin Bodhisattva. What's her part in all this?
Ah, Guanyin is key. She'd visited him earlier and basically laid out a path to redemption. She told him to repent and, crucially, to protect a scripture seeker, that's Tang Sanzang, on a journey to the West. This pilgrimage is his way out, his atonement.
So Tang Sanzang basically stumbles upon his divinely appointed, superpowered bodyguard. And Tang Sanzang, he's willing to help straight away, even though he's got, like, no tools, no crowbar.
It seems so. It probably shows his compassion, maybe a bit of trusting nature, too. He just wants to help this being. And Sun Wukong reassures him, you know, don't worry about tools, boss. Just get this seal off the mountain. I can handle the rest.
Right. Which leads them up the mountain with Lu Boken, the hunter guide. And the description of the seal is pretty mystical.
Oh, absolutely. There's this brilliant golden light and auspicious aura all around this stone that has 6 golden characters on it.
The Mani Padme Hum mantra, right.
Exactly. A powerful Buddhist mantra. It really emphasizes the weight of his imprisonment. And Tang Sanzang, he doesn't just rip it off. He says a prayer first. Asks for a sign, basically checking, is this really my disciple? Is this meant to be?
He's being cautious. Good call, probably. And then the release itself sounds dramatic.
Extremely. Fragrant wind blows. A guardian spirit apparently snatches the seal away to report back to the Buddha. And then bang, the mountain cracks open and Sun Wukong bursts out. Must have been deafening.
Wow. And after 500 years, what's his first move?
He immediately bows and thanks Tang Sanzang and Lu Boken. He knows who freed him and shows genuine gratitude. He understands this is his big chance.
And there's that little detail about the horse freaking out.
Right. Tang Sanzang's horse gets really spooked. It's a nod to Sun Wukong's old job in heaven as the Bimo One, the keeper of the heavenly horses. Even the animal senses power, maybe.
Funny. So they sort of formalize things then.
Yes. Tang Sanzang gives him a monastic name, Xingjie, which means traveler or pilgrim. It fits his look, apparently like a small, bald-headed monk, a Zhao Tutuo, and, you know, their whole mission. Sun Wukong then shares his own name, too.
A proper induction, and Lu Boken, the hunter.
He heads off. He acknowledges Tang Sanzang's good fortune in finding such a powerful helper, and basically exits the stage, leaving the two of them to get started.
So now it's just the monk and the monkey. How does that first leg of the journey go?
Unconventionally. Mm. Sun Wukong just strides ahead, stark naked, carrying all the luggage.
Naked? Seriously?
Completely. Not exactly standard pilgrim protocol. And then almost immediately, a tiger appears.
Okay, that sounds bad. Tang Sanzang must have been terrified.
He was. But Sun Wukong, totally unfazed, he actually jokes, oh good, it's bringing me some clothes.
He says, what? That's bold.
It's pure Sun Wukong. And this is where we see his power unleashed for the first time since being freed. He just casually pulls a needle from behind his ear.
A needle?
Yep. Just a tiny needle. And it instantly transforms into his legendary weapon, that massive iron cudgel, the Rui Jingo Bang, As you wish, golden hooped rod.
Okay, that's more like it. So the tiger doesn't stand a chance, I'm guessing.
Not even close. One hit, and the tiger's done for. It's incredibly swift and brutal. The text makes a point of contrasting it with how Lu Boken struggled for ages with the tiger earlier. Tang Senzang is just stunned, shocked by the violence, the raw power.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's a pretty stark difference in how they operate. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's the first major sign of the friction to come. Tang Senzang is all about compassion, and Sun Wukong is, well, let's just say practical.
Practical, like skinning the tiger afterwards.
Exactly. He skins the tiger right there and then, uses some vines, and makes himself a tiger skin loincloth. Resourceful, you have to give him that.
Definitely unconventional monastic wear.
He then explains about his staff, how it can shrink down to a needle or grow enormous, how he got it from the Dragon King of the Eastern Sea. It's not just a stick, it's a divine weapon.
And he's not exactly humble about his abilities, is he?
Not in the slightest. He starts boasting about how he can handle dragons and tigers, understands everything, basically reminding Tang Sanzang and maybe himself that he's the great sage equaling heaven, just out of jail.
Discern appearance and identify colors, listen to sounds, and analyze principles. It implies this deep, almost intuitive understanding of reality itself, not just brute force, but insight.
And they boast about power that spans everything. Greatness measuring the cosmos, smallness fitting on a hair.
Yeah, that line really captures it. Limitless scale. From the infinitely large to the infinitesimally small.
Total control, basically.
Don't worry, I've got this handled, no matter how strange things seem.
And unpredictable, too. Changing without end, appearing and disappearing without trace.
Tang Senzang must feel relief. A sense of security. Where do they go next?
They manage to find lodging in an old man's estate.
And the old man who comes to the door, he's understandably terrified.
Yeah, he sees Monkey described as evil-looking, apparently.
Right, with a tiger skin around his waist. The old man compares him to a thunder god, I think.
And just yells, "Ghost!" Ghosts have come. Straight to panic mode. He's completely confused.
Thinks maybe they're from the local temple or something.
Yeah, and he's like, why are you bringing this evil person here? Shows you how quickly people judge on looks, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And Monkey tries to sort it out, you know, declares he's not some pushover, but the great sage equal to heaven.
Which is a pretty big title. You'd think that would clarify things.
You would.
Thankfully, Tang Monk steps in at this point, tries to calm things down.
Good old Tang Monk, the voice of reason.
He reassures the old man, look, he's my disciple.
And does the old man finally buy it?
Eventually, yeah. He says Monkey looks a bit familiar. He says he knew Monkey. As a child.
You Monkey, the great sage. As a kid.
Yes. And he remembers him gathering firewood and, get this, picking vegetables off his face.
Oh, his face. Okay, that's really strange.
Right. Unbelievable.
So what's the old man's story then? How does he explain this?
Okay, so the old man says he's 130 years old.
130. Okay.
And he's lived right there at the foot of that mountain. Well, he says the mountain fell from the sky 500 years ago and trapped some kind of deity. That's the story passed down from his ancestors, apparently.
Ah, so it's folklore, a family legend tied to the place.
Exactly. And he claims he recognizes Monkey as that trapped deity.
Wow. So despite the changes, the time passed, he sees him and thinks, that's the guy who was trapped under the mountain. He got out.
But then he immediately doubts it. Like, how could he have gotten out?
So Monkey tries to explain, right? Mentions a bodhisattva helped him.
Uh-huh. And that he's Tang Monk's disciple now, traveling with him. He seems to accept it, shows respect, bows.
Okay, so a resolution, kind of.
Yeah, he invites them in, calls his family, tells them the whole story. They're apparently quite happy to hear it all.
Huh.
And they offer hospitality, you know, tea. And Tang Monk explains their quest, going west for scriptures, mentions they just escaped some other trouble. And then there's this nice little connection. The old man's surname is Chen. Tang Senzang reveals that his original family name was also Chen before he became a monk. So they have this shared ancestry, Huazong.
A small world moment. So things are looking up. They get settled in.
Yes, they get a bath, borrow needle and thread. Sun Wukong actually makes his tiger skin into a proper loincloth and puts on a spare white robe of Tang Senzang's.
Cleaning up his act a bit.
Trying to. And Tang Senzang actually approves, says he looks more like a proper Xingzi, a pilgrim now. It feels like maybe they're finding a balance.
Okay, so maybe this partnership can work. But I have a feeling that peace doesn't last long.
You are absolutely right. The very next morning, they set off again. Winter setting in, the scenery's changing, and bam, They're ambushed by six robbers.
Oh no, not again.
And these guys sound serious. Spears, swords, bows. They demand everything and threaten their lives.
Tang Senzang must be beside himself.
Utterly terrified. Sun Wukong, though, predictably cool. He even jokes again, oh, look, more people bringing his clothes and travel money.
Tang Senzang can't have appreciated that.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Sun Wukong then sort of playfully asks the robbers what their deal is, what they're after.
And we find out their names are significant.
Very significant. They're called things like eye sees joy, ear hears anger, nose smells love, tongue tastes thought, mind intends desire, and body feels sorrow.
Wow. Okay, so it's symbolic. They represent temptations, the senses.
Exactly. It's a hint that the real dangers on this journey aren't just physical monsters, but also these internal struggles, the attachments and emotions, which makes Sun Wukong's reaction even more telling. Mocks them, offering to split whatever they manage to steal 50-50.
That's not going to go over well.
It doesn't. The robbers are furious they attack. Sun Wukong just stands there, lets them try, and then, with incredible speed, he kills all six of them. Just like that.
Kills them all. Just wipes them out.
Instantly. With his staff. It's brutal and decisive.
And Tang Senzang.
He is horrified, absolutely appalled. He immediately launches into this lecture about Buddhist principles, nonviolence, compassion. He tells Sun Wukong off in no uncertain terms.
This is the big clash, isn't it?
This is the major moral collision. Tang Senzang argues that even criminals shouldn't be killed like that, that it was merciless, reckless. He's worried about the karma, the consequences, everything.
What's Sun Wukong's defense?
Simple. They were going to kill you, master. I saved your life. For him, it's pure self-preservation, protecting his charge. Consequences don't really factor in.
So they're just completely at odds, different universes, morally speaking.
Totally irreconcilable viewpoints at this stage. Tang Senzang is about the ideal, the principle. Sun Wukong is about the immediate reality, the threat.
And this disagreement, it leads to a split.
It does. Sun Wukong gets really angry. He's not used to being told off. Especially not after being the great sage. He basically says, if you don't like how I do things, I'm out of here. And he just vanishes, flies off in a huff.
Just leaves him. Wow. Poor Tang Senzang.
Left completely alone, on the road, feeling abandoned and probably regretting being so harsh. He continues westward by himself, lamenting.
But help is on the way, presumably. This is where Guanyin steps back in.
Exactly. He soon encounters an old woman, very kind. Offers him a spare set of monk's clothes, a cassock, and a hat that supposedly belonged to her son who passed away.
Seems helpful, but you just know there's a catch.
There's always a catch with divine intervention. She explains the clothes have special properties, the cassock helps with rituals, the hat helps with reciting scriptures. Nice perks.
Okay, but what's the real purpose?
The real purpose is the hat. She teaches Tang San's Anola secret mantra, the Dingsen Zenyan, or as it's better known, the Jinger Zu, the tightening hoop mantra.
The infamous headband.
That's the one. She tells him, this mantra will allow him to control Sun Wukong if he gets out of line again. She instructs him to memorize it secretly, trick Sun Wukong into wearing the hat, and then use the mantra when needed.
Clever.
And devious.
And just like that, the old woman transforms into a blaze of golden light, revealing herself as Guanyin Bodhisattva.
So she directly gives him the means to control his wayward disciple.
Precisely. Tang Senzang is overcome with gratitude, bows down, and carefully memorizes that very important mantra.
Okay, so Tang Senzang is now armed, in a manner of speaking. What's Sun Wukong been up to during his strop?
He flew straight off to his old haunt, the underwater palace of the Dragon King of the Eastern Sea.
A bit of comfort seeking.
Seems like it. The Dragon King welcomes him, hears about his release, and importantly, about him becoming a monk. The Dragon King sort of, he basically asks, you're a monk now. Why aren't you sticking with the mission? Why leave Tang Monk? So Wukong explains why he left. He says Tang Monk was just like nagging him constantly.
Nagging?
About Wukong killing some robbers they encountered. Wukong says Tang Monk, basically everything Wukong did was wrong.
He dealt with the problem his way and the monk wasn't happy.
Pretty much. Wukong feels misunderstood.
Yeah.
He even says Tang Monk just doesn't understand people or maybe human nature, like the harsh realities.
Right. And then the painting comes up.
Yeah. Wukong notices it on the wall. Jushu, giving shoes at Yi Bridge. He asks about it.
And the Dragon King explains the story.
He does. It's about an old man, Huang Shigong, and a young guy, Zhang Liang. The old man keeps dropping his shoe under a bridge.
Okay. Bit weird.
Well, He makes Zhang Liang go get it, not just once, but repeatedly. And Zhang Liang just does it, you know, respectfully, without getting arrogant or annoyed.
So it's a test of patience, humility.
Exactly. Huang Shigong is impressed by this. So he gives Zhang Liang this secret knowledge, like military strategy, I think, which helps him serve the Han Dynasty later on. Big reward for basically picking up a shoe.
So the message is, diligence pays off, even in small, maybe annoying tasks.
That's the connection the Dragon King makes. He talks about Huangshu reforming evil, punishing wrongdoing, and creating goodness. He's holding up Zhang Liang as this example for Wukong.
Like, see, this guy showed humility and persistence, and look what happened. Maybe you should try that instead of just storming off.
Pretty much. He's pointing out that Wukong's impulsiveness, and let's be honest, his ego, might be holding him back from truly reforming.
It's subtle advice, but powerful. Don't let your pride or need for freedom sabotage your path.
And he specifically tells Wukong, don't be distant from your master for too long. Stick with it.
It's almost like the Dragon King is stepping in as a temporary mentor here.
In a way, yes. A reality check, reminding him that the journey and Tang Monk's guidance are actually important for Wukong's own development, not just fulfilling some task. He warns Sun Wukong that without these, he'll just remain a powerful demon, not achieve real enlightenment.
A bit of a reality check from an old friend. Does it work?
It seems to make Sun Wukong think. He reflects on it and decides, maybe a little sheepishly, to go back to Tang San Zhang.
Good decision. Does he fly straight back?
Pretty much. He bumps into Guan Yin again briefly, who sort of nods her approval that he's returning. Then he finds Tang San Zhang still waiting by the road.
Must have been an awkward reunion.
A little. Tang San Zhang gives him a mild telling off for lying about where he went. Oh, yeah. Classic Sun Wukong. He puffs himself up. You know, let me tell you, teacher, I can ride the cloud somersault. One leap, 108,000 leap. I can pop over and back in an instant.
Basically, don't sweat it. Teach, I can go visit the Dragon King for a cup of tea and be back before you can even blink.
Which, you know, the teacher doesn't quite buy. He's like, where have you been? You told me to wait here. Scared to move a muscle, just waiting for you.
And then the trap is sprung.
Pretty much. Then Sun Wukong spots the new cassock and, more importantly, the fancy new hat in the luggage.
And he wants it.
Of course he does. It looks nice. He asks Tang San Zhang if he can wear it.
And Tang San Zhang
plays it cool.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. If you like it, wear it. Sun Wukong pops the hat on his head. Uh-huh. And Tang San Zhang immediately, silently, starts reciting the mantra Guan Yin taught him.
Ouch. This is going to hurt.
Excruciatingly. Sun Wukong collapses, screaming about the pain in his head. He realizes it's the hat, tries frantically to pull it off, smash it, cut it. Nothing works. It's like it's grown into his skull.
And Tang San Zhang just keeps chanting.
He chants, the pain gets worse. He stops, the pain stops. Sun Wukong figures it out pretty quickly.
Don't chant. When you chant, it hurts. What is this?
An old woman taught it to me just now. Tang San Zhang is controlling him with this hat and the secret words.
So does he give in?
Not immediately. He pretends to be sorry, pretends to obey, but then he secretly tries to raise his staff to hit Tang San Zhang.
Seriously, after all that pain.
He's stubborn. But Tang San Zhang feels the intention, hits him with the mantra again, even harder this time. Sun Wukong is completely incapacitated, rolling on the ground in agony.
Okay, that must have convinced him.
Don't chant. Enough. No more chanting. No more chanting. No need to say more. This old woman, she had Guan Yin. How could she harm me like this?
He feels harmed by Guan Yin.
And Sun Zhang steps in, trying to explain, maybe calm him down. He says, this method, since he gave it to me, he must already know about it.
Right.
If you go looking for him, he'll recite it.
It's chilling.
That finally breaks him.
Yeah.
He completely surrenders, begs for mercy, and genuinely promises this time, for real, to protect Tang San Zhang faithfully, all the way to the West, and never disobey again.
And just like that, the power dynamic is set.
Irrevocably. The tightening hoop is the ultimate guarantee of obedience. And so with the master now firmly in control of his incredibly powerful but volatile disciple, they set off westward once more.
What an incredible sequence of events. So just to recap for everyone listening, we saw Sun Wukong's traumatic release after centuries, that first brutal display of power with the tiger, the huge clash of values over killing the robbers, his angry departure, and then Guan Yin's intervention leading to, well, the ultimate control mechanism with the golden hoop.
Exactly. It lays bare their fundamental differences right from the start. Tang San Zhang, all piety and compassion, sometimes maybe a bit naive. Sun Wukong, all power, pragmatism, and a serious anger management issue, maybe,
Yeah.
but also incredibly capable.
Which really leaves us with a fascinating question, doesn't it? Thinking about this incredibly rocky start, the violence, the arguments, the forced control, what does it tell us about the journey ahead? How on earth are these two going to make it to the West together? How do they learn to coexist?
That's the core of it, isn't it? Think about those themes. Freedom versus responsibility, compassion versus necessity, the nature of control, the potential for redemption and change, even when you start from such conflicting places. This first encounter, it's really just setting the stage for all the complexities to come.
Absolutely. So, how does this foundation shape everything that follows?